Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It's I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. This week, we not only do we continue our four-state Comic-Con series, but we also continue our four-state Comic-Con panel series. And this week, we continue it with the Invisible Comic Panel. I know it sounds a little bit confusing, and we're not talking about a comic that in it upon itself is invisible, or a character that is invisible. Well, in a way, you'll find that out in the panel. But it's a panel was about the discussion and inspiration of including the men and women who serve our country and the problem of homelessness that plagues our country's heroes. So it was a very interesting panel. It features Jason So and Pat LaMarche. And for those of you who are new to the show and never heard a panel episode before, and those returning to the show and remember the panel episodes we used to share with you, let me just remind you about the whole disclaimer process. This is our disclaimer in regards to panel episodes. The disclaimers are, one, this is a panel episode. This is the presenter's content. We were allowed to record this content. The viewpoints and the topics are not our own. It is theirs. So take it as you will, which also can mean this is their viewpoints, not ours. They may or may not line up with our viewpoints. So we just want to share their stuff with all of you. That's number one. Number two is this is, again, a panel episode. We may have needed to clean up the audio or edit the audio in some way. Meaning that, again, because of how the situation was recorded, I might have needed to boost the audio a little bit so you're able to hear it better. Or if I could, boost sections so you could hear the audience questions. That's number one. Number two, if I could not boost the audio enough so you're able to hear the audience questions, I trimmed it out. Nothing in this particular panel was trimmed out. I managed to boost it enough so you're able to at least make out in some way audience questions. So that being said, I hope you enjoy this panel. I'm going to step back and let you all hear the panel. I hope you enjoyed this panel featuring two amazing creators and talking about how they created this brand new comic, and all the links to where to find it and everything else should be in the description down below. So here is the panel now.
So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Pat LaMarche. This is Jason So. And so about 2 years ago, could it have been that long?
About that.
Jason, I am a homeless advocate. I advocate for people experiencing homelessness. And I was a journalist for lots and lots and lots of years. And I write about homelessness. So a bunch of my really boring books that aren't comic books are up here. And I've been working with folks for a long time. I actually was a broadcaster, and the only thing I've ever done that people in this room might find interesting is I used to work for Stephen King, you know, the scary guy. He owns radio stations, and I was his morning show.
Wow.
But Jason gave me a call, and he said, I want to write a comic, or produce or draw a comic book, and I want my superhero to be experiencing homelessness. And I said, well, I would love to write that book, even though I don't know how to write comic books. I want to write that book, but only if I can make your superhero a veteran. Because having run agencies for about a decade, the natural leader in the group always in homelessness is the veteran in the room. They're the people uniquely trained not to get caught. They're uniquely trained to blend in and hide. They're uniquely trained to eat the uneatable. They are just uniquely trained to take a situation, even the other than honorably discharged, even the people who maybe developed issues in the military or after, they're still the leaders in the group. They're the one who, when the woman and her two kids get burned out of their house, he takes care of them. So together, we came up with Invisible. So the biggest problem with me writing this comic book was, even though I loved reading comic books, I didn't know how to write one. So I called my little brother, who was 55 at the time, and I said, how would we write this comic book? And he said, well, the guy's got to be invisible. He's homeless. So his superpower is invisibility. Mm-hmm. Your turn.
I was just bored, wanted to do a book, and I had read a few things that Patty had written and just fell in love with her writing. So as an artist, she makes it sound like it was easy. I sort of got on her a little bit about it, and I think I talked to her a few times and finally convinced her to write something for me. And then it just clicked. It was a good time. It was a difficult book to do because it wasn't like any other book that I'd done. I've done a couple books that are just fluff, you know, like zombies and stuff like that. So when I was doing the book with her, a lot of the stuff was real, you know, the places were real, the things were real in it. I couldn't just pull it out of my rear and make it imaginary. So it was brutal that way. And it took us time because our colorist was Chad Bruce, and he is a perfectionist in a way. Like, he really sweats the small details, guys.
He also was a senior graphic designer for Lockheed Martin.
I'll tell you about it too.
So when he was drawing military equipment,
it triggered the shit out of him.
Yeah.
It would.
It had to be, and I'm gonna pass this one around so you can take a look at it. But I mean, Jason drew Vietnam, he drew Iraq, he drew all kinds of equipment, in addition to superheroes and people and distressed people. You know, the amazing thing I think about comics is when you look at someone's face in a comic book and you know exactly what they're thinking. Now, of course, with the Joker, it might be a little easier.
He's serious.
Although he smiles when he's unhappy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I forget where I was at. So when I was doing the research for the book, the last thing I really wanted to do was to have vets come up to me and be like, you totally tanked on that. That's not what that's supposed to be. Or because it would happen, you know, if you make a mistake and the veterans know that that's not what the Huey looks like or that's the wrong Humvee, I would get called out on it. So I did as much research as possible about the book.
The veteran himself is actually based on a veteran that, so I used to be the vice president of Safe Harbor Homeless Shelter. I don't know if anyone knows what that is. It's Cumberland County's largest homeless shelter, and it's in Carlisle. And we got a phone call from the Lebanon VA clinic that said, we've got a veteran and he's been in bad, bad shape. This guy's got PTS.
What's his name, Mac?
His name was not Matt.
Okay.
Yeah. And he came to us and they said, do you have room for him? And I said, no. And she said, well, I can't release him just out. I need him to go somewhere. And I went to my boss and we put a bed in the conference room. Mm-hmm. And we turned our homeless shelter conference room into this guy's bedroom. And we took him in. And so basically this story is his story. He was in Vietnam. He was drafted at, you know, 2 minutes after 18. When he got over there, he was a medic. I make this guy a corpsman with the Marines, so he's actually in the Navy. But he was a medic, and he went over there, and the Huey helicopter he was on when they were bringing out Arvin, which are South Vietnamese, we call it the Arvin. They were bringing him out of the jungle because he was seriously wounded, and the chopper went down. And the two pilots died. The two pilots died, the Arvin died, and my guy didn't die. And he carried that leftover baggage of being the only survivor of this helicopter crash for a really, really long time. And so we modeled him after Mac, but because it's a comic book, You can draw, he can draw a Vietnam veteran in 2021, and he still looks like he's 40 because he's got magic powers, right?
Super magic powers.
Superpowers, right? And if he's going to be able to be invisible, why can't he stay young? I mean, that's just part of it, right? And actually, if you remember J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit, that was one of the things that going invisible did for Smeagol, right? Was it changed his appearance? It didn't make him younger. It made him kind of nasty. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Do you guys have, you know, we could go on about ourselves for a long time. Do you have any questions about comic books or homelessness or making comic books about real life that actually also depart into fantasy or?
I will pass my microphone around. You guys can see how this thing works.
The Joker?
Directional. You have to talk into it like this.
My question is for the writer. I'm used to writing short stories. I'm used to writing maybe novels. How do you change that? Because that's what you started as. How do you change that in the comic book format?
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Not to discourage you in any way. The difficult thing is when you're writing a short story, like these stories here, this Priscilla series is a series for 8 to 80-year-olds about a woman in the park. These kids love the woman, and then after a while they realize she's in the park all the time because she lives in the park, right? When you're writing, you draw a picture, right? You describe the park, you describe the woman, you just. When I wrote for Invisible, I realized I had about 5,000 too many words. Because everything I had to say, Jason was drawing. So it's more like writing a screenplay, right? You figure out what the scene's going to be, and then you pick the dialogue, and then you have long, great conversations with your artist, and you say, oh, yeah, well, you know, and we had a lot of these really great conversations, especially because I had a real guy in my mind, you know? And then on top of that, well, one of the things we did was we made him a Native American. And that was one of the things my brother insisted on, because the largest demographic in the military is Native Americans. They proportionately more Native Americans serve in the military than any other subset of the United States. So we made Mac a Native American. And then there's also a minister in the book. And so we modeled him after a guy in Mechanicsburg who has a parking lot ministry. That's where Mac, our character, sleeps. But in all the cases of all of these scenes, all I needed was the dialogue. And so it went from probably, it was maybe a 4,000 word book, and it's probably a 600 word book now, right? So that's the hardest thing, is realizing you're gonna, and it's also the best thing. So once you get used to it, saying, oh, well, he's got a bottle of penicillin. I don't need to describe the bottle of penicillin. Jason's going to give me the bottle of penicillin. So I didn't even have to write that he had one. We just had a frame with him giving it to the little girl that needs the medicine, right? So, and that's because he's a coroner. But so all of those scenes, those are, I think, the hardest turned into easiest part of it. I still think as a writer and as a journalist, which is how I started out, it would be easier for me to write a book than a comic book still. But it was a great experience.
As an artist, though, sometimes it's difficult to work with, say, could we just call it a novelist, somebody who's used to writing long stuff because they want to give you just these blaster paragraphs. You're like, man, that is not going to fit on the page. Could you trim the fat a little bit? So usually it's like writers tend to write, you know, and sometimes they go a little beyond what you need them to do. Essentially, you could just cut the scene for me, tell me, you know, what you want from it, and I can take it from there. And then you can minimize your dialogue so you're not flooding it. Because when you're reading a comic book, you're going to get to that page where you're like, man, that's a lot of words for a freaking comic book. You want to sort of keep it a little short and sweet and get to the point. Trim the fat is what I like to call it. Any other questions? You guys want me to walk you through the drawing process quick? It's really simple. What I'll do is I use non-photo pens and pencils. So I do that so I don't have to erase. And essentially what it is light blue. So I'm drawing in light blue, and then I ink over it, and then I'll scan it, and then I'll take the blue away, and I never have to erase. Does that make sense? Like, I don't, because when you erase, sometimes you get a little, I don't know about you guys, but if I mess up, I'm like, oh, you piece of crap, and I'll erase the living poop out of it. And you'll mess up the piece sometimes with that. You'll absolutely, paper has a coat to it, a top coat, and if you puncture that or go through that or rub it out, it can essentially mess up the thing. So that's why I don't use traditional pencils and I use blue lines. So when I ink over it, it's just easy money. Otherwise, I can't tell you how many pieces I've messed up by trying to get like perfection instead of just progress, you know? Like, I don't get wrapped up on the perfection of it all, because I know at the end of it all, I'll have a story, you know? I don't sweat the super small details when it comes to the work. Once it's scanned off and the color's taken away, we go right to coloring. So it's all digital coloring, which is great because it produces a better product in the end than, say, like watercolors or even markers. I know there's a lot of amazing artists out there that can do watercolors and markers, but when it comes to consistency of comic books, you want not perfection, but you want a level playing field every single time, right? You want every single page to have the same quality, and you won't get that really with markers or pens a lot of times. And if you do, it's gonna take them forever to do it, you know? Digitally coloring and digitally formatting saves you a lot of time. Now, I'm old school, I'm 46, so I'm analog, which means I draw on paper. I know a lot of people draw on pads, and you know, the technology's changed, and that's cool. I'm just older. When I was younger, you know, my mom would give me pens and papers, and poof, off I went. You know, I'm sure it was a really easy fix there for her, not having to give me digital stuff. But it doesn't really matter how you do it, just how, you know, getting there, right? So you could skin a cat a million different ways as long as you have the end result, you know? Like, you want to make a book, you can do it any way you want. I just choose to do it with pen and ink, what you would call like an old school style, with non-photo pencils, inks, scan, color. You know, that's the old school method.
He has his portfolio over at the booth, which is just as you come in. And you can see that original artwork, the original pencil and ink. He's got that in the portfolio. You can check it out when you come by.
So, yes.
I don't mean to interrupt.
No, by all means.
You said you use blue line.
Yes.
If there's a mistake you do, how do you know, that's a mistake, I need to go this route instead of this route, and you ink over it?
Usually your brain will automatically catch that, you know. So if I'm sketching out on something and I don't like a line, I'll ignore it, right? So it'll still be there, but I ignore it. I know that when I'm going to ink it, I don't care about it, right? And I just ink right around it and let it go. And if it's a tight thing, I'll get like this electric eraser out and just really just skim it off, you know, because sometimes when you're sketching, I'm not perfect, you know what I mean? Like, I'll make mistakes. I have to work my way through the art. Okay, I have to build it, I have to build my layers, and I have to basically flesh it out, okay? Sometimes I don't get the right angles or something, so I'll start shaving away some of those lines if it's gonna confuse me too much. Also, I'll use a non-photo purple. If it's a really brutal scene, right, and you got a lot of stuff going on, a blue or a pencil or whatever, a single tone can really mess with your eyes when you're drawing, okay? So what I'll do to break that monotony is I'll use a non-photo purple as well in the background or foreground. I'll switch them out a little bit. If it's becoming too muddy and it's giving me a headache, I'll actually use two versions of non-photo just to avoid that. You know, it's brutal, you know? You're gonna get a splitting headache because your mind's trying to differentiate the scene on the same color. So if you have to, you can just use another color as non-photo.
The other thing that was cool for this comic book that you should explain is our character is invisible, and he had to draw an invisible character.
Yeah, yeah. So Chad and I were trying to figure out how we could make Mac go invisible. Mac is the main character in this book. And there's a couple ways you can do this, right? You could do the old school Spider-Man route where, you know, I'm drawing a halo of Mac and then I'm drawing behind it, but that just seemed like a waste of my time. So we actually took almost an animation approach to it where we would have two layers, right? Because we're going digital for color anyway, we could do the scene and then wherever we wanted Mac, I could do a secondary panel, scan that off, and we could process it that way. So then you could superimpose one image on the other image and you wouldn't have to draw through it, you know, because you want to show a background, right? Like if you were to see me here and I'm invisible, you're gonna see the banner behind me. And it's really difficult to show that if you don't take a multi-layered approach, right? So when you have two layers, it makes it insanely easy to do. Now the originals might look a little weird. You look at them, you're gonna be like, that has nothing in it but a background. Well, that's because there's a secondary piece of paper to it that has the actual scene. So if you guys were to come by the page or the booth that we have, I could show you what I'm talking about. And it's gonna look, you know, again, I'm not trying to get perfection with my art, right? Like, I'm trying to tell a story. None of that stuff really matters because perfection's impossible. So I just want to get the story out there. I don't care what the physical page looks like. I don't care what my sequential page looks like because I know when we start cleaning it up and we go digital, I can fix a lot of the things that I might make mistakes on. And I make mistakes all the time. Sometimes it seems like I make mistakes on every single page. Sometimes it seems like I smoke them fools, right? And I'm just running along and then something trips me up. But with the invisible book, I didn't want to get, you know, through a page and start working on Mac and then screw it up and be like, well, that's the end of it, and throw it away or something like that. So we took like a Disney approach, like multi-cell animation to Mac.
So this is a variant cover that has him invisible on it.
Oh, yeah.
You guys see that? So he's sneaking out.
He's sneaking past Angkor Wat.
Yeah. So what happens is in the book, not to tell you too much, this is the beginning. That helicopter I was telling you about, that the real guy gets shot down, it's shot down in the north. And so when the guy gives him the thing that makes him invisible, he says, you got to sneak back to the south, man. You know, you're caught up north here, you're going to be dead.
Or worse. Yeah. Or worse.
So this is one of two variant covers. There were 50. It's the last two that's left that we have. This is the regular cover.
Yeah.
All the proceeds, by the way, from these books go to help veterans experiencing homelessness. So, because we have a motto, only a jackass would make money on homeless veterans. And we try really hard not to be jackasses.
All the time.
Right.
All the time.
We try not to be jackasses all the time.
All the time.
Not that we try all the
sometimes
time.
Sometimes I not fail. To be jackasses, sometimes but. I'm a jackass on purpose. But when it comes to this book, I'm not doing that.
Right. So anyway, so it's really great. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Operation Veterans Hope. It's a shelter in
Mount Holly. Yep.
And then no questions asked. You present there, show up with your DD-214, which is proof that you're a veteran, honorably or dishonorably discharged, does not matter, other than honorably discharged.
Who's the guy who runs that?
John Locke.
He's amazing.
He's a
really
phenomenal
great guy.
He is also a veteran.
Yep.
It's an amazing place, and having been a person who runs shelters forever, the Veterans Administration does the best job of any of the governmental agencies that deal with homelessness, and there are a lot of them. FEMA deals with it. You know, I was out at Paradise when the campfire hit and 28,000 people became homeless in 80 minutes. You know, so FEMA deals with homelessness, HUD deals with homelessness, Housing and Urban Development, Health and Human Services, and the Department of Education. And hands down, the best, fastest response is from the Veterans Administration. And that's basically because you people, as voters, you support veterans so well, and your senators and representatives know it. So anyway, it still takes time. It might take a year and a half for a homeless family to get housing. It'll take 60 days for a veteran And in those 60 days, John Locke will give you a place to live. He's an amazing guy.
Yeah. Yeah. The so the reason I wanted to do something with the book is because I'm not a rich person, but I knew I wanted to help any way that I could. And I knew that doing a book would give us sort of a prolonged approach instead of just saying, smacking down money on the table and being like, yeah, there's a donation. This would have a little bit further of an outreach with not only people buying the books and us continuously donating money, but it'll also raise a little bit of awareness. There's so much stuff I didn't know about homelessness and veterans until I started digging into the book and digging into the research. You know, as an artist, you should do as much research as possible. And then when you start finding out the facts behind it all, it's pretty brutal, you know, like the percentage of homeless veterans and or the percentage of people that are homeless that are veterans. And it's pretty sad, actually. You know, it seems like we support troops when they're out at war making the government money. But as soon as they come home, we ignore them. You know, we treat them like secondhand citizens and pieces of shit. Like, nobody cares. They get spit on, they get yelled at, all sorts of stuff. So it's just a little way to continuously give back to that community. Snitsky threw me off there a little bit with his little mountain man roar. He's been doing that all day.
It was interesting. We had the book launch for this comic book at the U.S. Army Heritage and Education Center, AHEC, in
which is really cool, Carlisle, yeah.
And the head of the VA locally came to it. And there's a line in the comic book where, and if I have heard this line once, I've heard it 100 times from veterans. When I say, you know, there's a special deal for you. I can get you housed really fast. The federal government has a special deal for you. Quote, unquote, the veteran would repeat, I've had all the deals I want from the federal government. And so we put that line in the comic book because it was so universally said by veterans, like, I'm done. I don't want another deal from the federal government. And the guy from the VA, he was wonderful, he spoke, he was great. But when he went home and read the comic book, he wrote to me and said, I really wish you had left that line out. And I said, I really wish you worked in a homeless shelter. Because you wouldn't leave the line out, you know? And basically, you know, one of the things I've always marveled at is, you know, we use food as a holiday. Food is our celebration. Everything that's celebratory is food related. And so at Thanksgiving and Christmas in a shelter, you'd get tons of food. But the second largest food holiday in this year, nobody ever showed up with food, and that's the Super Bowl. So in my shelters, I used to be, we're going to have a Super Bowl party. And the minute I said that, people would donate food, like they just didn't think of it ahead of time. And we'd put the Super Bowl on, and we'd cook tons of food, and it would just be a great, plus in a shelter, you usually have to go to bed at like 9 o'clock. So, you know, 70-year-old men got to stay up till 11. It was very exciting. The minute the game would come on, the national anthem would play, and veteran or not, every single person in that room watching the Super Bowl would stand for the national anthem. And I was always so amazed. I'm like, man, if there's somebody that isn't going to stand for the national anthem, someone who's experiencing homelessness, but they're humble and they're sweet and they love their country, even though in my experience, my several thousand people I've kept track of in 10 years, 55% of the people that lived in the shelters I ran had an income, and 30% more were their children. So 85% of the unhoused I have come in contact with are the working poor and their kids. So, and still they stand for the national anthem. And I think, you know, the nice thing about this book is it is a way to give back to the veterans, but then to all people experiencing homelessness. Because even if you're a person working at McDonald's or stocking the shelves, or God, I can't tell you how many people live in shelters that work at those warehouses. You know, you're making America run, and you still love your country, and I think that's pretty cool.
Seems like the homeless number is skyrocketing as banks and other special interests are allowed to invest in the housing market. It's pushing the working class out of the housing market completely, and you have the working poor or people who have jobs and they're working, but they can't afford the $2,500 rent payment, right? And it's a bit of a shame. It's a bit of a shame.
So anyway, I always say to people, these are my books you want to buy if you want to cry yourself to sleep. This is the book you buy if you really want to have a lot of fun and have a little thought about people experiencing homelessness. You know, this book is 350 pages of Debbie Downer. I'd like to tell you it's a ball of fun, you ought to buy it, but it's just the truth.
It's a good read, though. You know, sometimes you need a little shook up. I think I still left out in America is the one I read. I didn't read the Priscilla, but the one, sometimes it's good to have that information that might depress you a little bit, but it's still information, right? It's still valid, it's still real, and it's stuff that you should know. So it's a great read if you want to cry.
Well, you know what's interesting about comic books, I learned this in the process of learning to write this, is all of the superheroes are created by disaster, right? I mean, my favorite example is Batman. He watches his parents get killed. I mean, you think I'm a downer?
Yeah.
Who writes that stuff? You know, so, and that's what I've witnessed in my job is people who have great adversity, who are local heroes. They're still making your cheeseburger. They're still packing your Amazon box. They're still making sure that their kids get as much as they can out of life. And they're doing it in tragedy, and that's what superheroes do in all of the comic books, you know, and supervillains, right? What makes somebody super duper bad? That's usually pretty, Mr. Joker, that's usually pretty much something, not that I'm calling you names, but that's usually something that's, was it Mr. Freeze? We'll move to him. Wasn't it his wife that died? What caused Freeze to be gone? Yeah, his wife died. So, yeah, it's this big... And the Penguin's parents hated him. Sad, sad, sad.
Our villain here is homelessness.
Our villain is homelessness. Ooh, we got a nasty villain.
Yeah, we got a pretty nasty villain.
No, we got a nasty villain. She's a girl.
Yeah, can I tell you something, though? As an artist, like, out of all the books I've done, I didn't do what I normally do, right, in this book. I did it. There's no... fantastic ninja gunfights. There's no ballistic fight scenes or anything like that. We sort of took a different approach to it. I mean, I'm all about the guns blazing. Personally, I would have liked for him to wax the villains, all of them, right? Like, it would have been simple, and he could have done it, but he just chooses not to do it that way. The violence aspect isn't there. And it was a little weird doing where not a single person died in a book that I did. Yeah, so that's like that's the first book where nobody's died in it, you know.
And he does the Necroman series, so he also does books where people start
everybody,
out dead.
Yeah, everybody's gone, yeah. Yeah, they all die. It's good.
Our big villain is so nasty.
And she's based off of a real person.
Yeah, she is nasty. But she's not a person we know. She's just a famous person, and you'll figure her out when you read it. But
Maxwell.
The other thing about Mac is he was a medic in Vietnam, and he went to Vietnam for 18 months and never killed anyone.
That's why he couldn't kill
anybody.
So
he comes home,
book.
And he doesn't kill
Bullshit.
Anybody. Well, boy, he makes her wish she was dead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's pretty fun.
It's good. It's good. It was interesting It was interesting coming out of my wheelhouse and not having to rely on gratuitous violence. Yeah.
So, anybody else got any questions?
Any at all.
You don't have to have them.
You don't. Just one. It is a self-contained story, so you get it all in one shot, right? When Patty and I were doing this, as an artist, you know, like, I have to do certain books in a row, and I didn't really want to lock in to Invisible, so I sort of pushed Patty a little bit because I wanted a self-contained story. All the other books that I've done, they're in sequential. You need to... You know, I leave you hanging on this, so you need to buy this, and I leave you hanging here, so you need to get this. And I do that perpetually. So I wanted to make sure that Invisible is one shot, guys. You get it all in one, which is great, you know. Like, you don't really expect that a lot. normally you got to buy into the series and buy into the issues and buy volumes and stuff. So this is just real simple, real sweet, one book, one story.
It could have been three books pretty easily. It's also the maximum page count before they have to go to perfect binding.
Right.
So it's a really big book. It's like 32 or 36 pages. So it's a really long comic, but it is self-contained. And it is a big commitment to commit to making a comic that you're not going to make any money on, right? So Jason needs to go back to writing commercially profitable stuff. He couldn't devote his whole life to writing a series of charitable works.
But I wanted to anyway, you know? Sometimes you have to give of yourself just a little bit, you know? And I'd been kicking ass with zombies for forever, you know? Like, that's easy money. I can sleep and draw that stuff, and people love that. But I'm not going to give them the money from that. So that's why I did Invisible, just to give back a little bit more and perpetually give back. And I don't think we have, like, in the grand scheme of things, the book's almost sold out, which is a really good thing, you know? Like, it sucks because you're like, man, we're going to have to reprint and do this and do that. But at the end of the day, all that money was it's gone somewhere else to a charity. It's helped other people instead of, you know, just paying your bills and stuff like that, you know? It's a good thing.
Yeah, we have, so we have two different variants left. The first variant sold out the day that we had the book.
Yeah.
And then we have a couple of hundred of regular Invisibles left, and that's it. But the Priscilla books, these are sequential books. These are drawn by Bonnie Tweeney Shaw, and you're welcome to take a look at them. The artwork is... In fact, Mac, in the last book, Mac, the superhero from this, shows up in the Priscilla books, which is pretty fun. She draws him at a dumpster in other places, so it's a little bit of an Easter egg. But these books are sequential and should be read in order, because there's a nasty cliffhanger at the end of each one, and then if you read it out of order, you'll be mad at yourself. Anyways.
I'm good.
That's good. Well, anyway.
All right. Before we shut it down, one more shot for questions. Anybody got anything they want to throw at me? Fire away. Well, I had to design a few things, like what we wanted Mac to look like. So Patty, like, I like to call it spitballing, right? We'll spitball each other and just fling ideas at each other. Some stuff sticks, some stuff doesn't. So when it came to the totem that is part of Mac's powers, I had to design that, basically a turnaround sheet, like front, side, back. And then with Mac, like, we had to develop what he looked like, what we wanted him to look like. And I based a lot of the visuals off of, there's this truck stop joint by my house that has like this little trailer church, you know? And we based the trailer in this off of that, minus the neon sign. I just thought the neon sign was going to be like an awesome visual and things like that. So I mean, to answer your question, a lot, some of it, maybe all of it, I don't know.
Yeah, he did a lot of work. And the other thing is, he would draw Mac over and over and over and over again until Mac became his, you know, Mac changed a little in his early drawings. He kept drawing and then drawing. And I don't know about you, but I write something. I write it once. I might proofread it. I don't say, oh, I think I'll write that paragraph again, you know? And that's what he was doing. He was drawing it over and over and over again until it was like second nature, like drawing his brother or something.
As an artist, I think I suffer sometimes from OCD, right? So I have to learn the character. So I have to hammer the character and I have to draw the character. And the only way I'm going to learn the character is to draw him. I mean, nonstop until it becomes second nature. And I do that with every character that I do. With Necroman, Jim Bob John. I'm doing a book now with Patty called Major Tom vs. the Spider from Mars. But the trick is, you know, when you're doing this stuff, just keep drawing the character until it becomes very familiar for you. And it's almost like I could close my eyes and draw Mac out in a heartbeat, because it's like that muscle memory, you know, like you build it and you understand the fundamentals of it. So... Yeah. Drawing Mac was great. It was good. It was a learning.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
The other thing we wanted to throw out there is that Wham Comics is a nonprofit organization. It's part of the Charles Bruce Foundation.
Writers, artists, musicians.
Yeah, Wham is writers, artists, and musicians, right? And if you're out there and you're drawing a comic or you're writing a comic and you need a publisher, they want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, you can get the contact information in all of these books. Well, not this one. This is a different publisher, but... all these books have the contact information. We also have postcards at the table. He has free prints you can pick up. And we'll put the contact information for the Charles Bruce Foundation on the back. So if you're starting out or you're trying to get your first thing published and you want and you're looking for a publisher, Charles Bruce Foundation wants to hear from you.
All of you artists and writers out there. Are we good?
Young people too.
Thank you, everybody, for showing up. Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate you guys. If you don't have one of these books yet, you can come up here and get one, or you can come to AA38, which I think is where I'm at. Can't miss me.
We're on the way to the restroom.
Somewhere over there. Yeah, you can just find us there. But thank you guys very much. We appreciate it.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that panel. If you have any questions or comments or whatever, please feel free to email us at the show, which is our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or you can leave them on the one of the posts on our Facebook page, on the pinned post on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/theLongCoatMafiaPodcast. It's the page, not the group page, because we don't really post too much in the group. So please go to our page, like it, so forth and so on. We do have a bunch of videos of the 4th State Comic-Con event on our YouTube channel. Just head on over to YouTube and search for Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It'll come up. Hit the subscribe button. And might add our Facebook link, our email, our YouTube, and everything else, including where to find the people who presented this panel, are in the description down below of where you got this this podcast. Now, if the links are not clickable in where you got it, whether it be Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, iTunes, wherever, Spotify, just head on over to our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. All the links there are clickable, and you'll be able to find the podcast, everything you need there, from our social media, the presenters' links, everything. So I wish all of you to take care, and I'll see all of you next week with the next panel in our series.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.